They say, the harder the work, the greater the reward. This is our life's work.
Good morning. It is 9:10, Wednesday, February 2nd. This is the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the associate editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News. And I'm so thankful this week, guys, that we finally have some racing to talk about for like 5 minutes before we get to the drugs and the arrests and the overall messiness of this sport.
And that was just Bill's week out.
Hi, good morning. I'm Bill Finley from the Thoroughbred Daily News. You know, one of the thoughts that I had over the weekend, was watching the football games, and it'll be the same in the Super Bowl, how just eerie it is to think they're playing on this hallowed ground of Hollywood Park, where all these great horses ran for so many years. And well, that's racing in 2020, a great track in the Los Angeles area. Can't make it, and now is take Paradise and put up a parking lot.
Jonathan Green, general manager of DJ Stable. And for those of you that don't know, today is Groundhog Day. And it's also Groundhog Day for us, Joe, as you alluded to, because we're going to be talking a lot about courts and injunctions and all the same nonsense we've been talking about, seems like, for the past year.
We're going to have to take the writer's room off of TDN and put it on court TV, I think, at a certain point.
I think you're right. Can we get robes? Can we get like cool robes and gavels?
Listen, I don't need any extra encouragement to dress down for the show. So if you can get like a writing room robe, I'm all about it.
Yep. Speaking of which, thank you to Darley for sending us some swag. Bill, I also have a jacket for you. Joe, unfortunately, they didn't send me any women's sizes. So I asked them to send me a new one for you because you have very slight hips compared to the other two of us.
I wonder how you know the size of my hips, but I guess there was that one night that I slept over at your house, so I'll just leave that be. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Keeneland's spring meet returns April 8th through April 29th. New Keeneland Select accounts that wager $300 in the first 30 days earn $100 back with the sign-up bonus. Visit KeenelandSelect.com to sign up. Can't wait for that Keeneland meet. Just a little over 2 months away. It'll be here before you know it. So as I alluded to in the open, we finally have some racing to talk about. It's been a minute. Other than the Malibu, we really haven't spoken about any races since the Breeders' Cup. So we're on 3 months now where we've talked about one race on this show. In our defense, there's been a lot of other news to discuss and to break down. But over the weekend, we had the Pegasus World Cup card at Gulfstream. We also had some racing at Santa Anita and Oakland that we might touch on a little bit. But the story of the weekend, obviously, was Life is Good in the Pegasus World Cup. Getting to the front and blowing apart that field, really putting kind of a insurmountable distance on Nick's Go, considering Nick's Go's running style. Honestly, ironically, I thought that this was kind of one of Nick's Go's most impressive races of his life, considering the way he was taken out of his game, for him to still be second in that race, chasing the entire way, chasing a really fast horse in Life is Good. Yeah, I thought that kind of proved a little bit more than some of his wins did, to me at least. But Life is Good is scary good and is probably going to go to the Dubai World Cup next. We talked to Arad Ortiz Jr. yesterday about him. He had a lot of great things to say about the horse, obviously. But I'm curious to get Bill and John's thoughts, and then we'll bring it back to me.
Well, Joe, we knew he was a very good horse. I mean, what he had done throughout his career, winning the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile as he did. But this was a test so far as, is he just another good horse or is he something well beyond that? And not only did he pass the test, he passed it with astonishing ease. And, you know, it's not just that he won. Look what he did to a wonderful horse in Nick's Go, who's the horse of the year of 2021. And not only did he beat him, but he beat him right out of the gate. He outran him every step of the way. And they were just at the finish line. And you're right, Nick's Go, you know, did show some things that deserve the praise that you heaped on him. But, you know, Life is Good was better than him every single step of the way. There was no comparison. He was far and away the superior horse on that day. To me, the biggest surprise was not that he won. I did pick Nick's Go, but obviously I'm not shocked or at least bit surprised that Life is Good won. But how the heck did he get three lengths in front of that horse, especially breaking outside of him? I think that there's two reasons for that. Number one, he's that fast. And number two, should Joel Rosario have been more aggressive on Nick's Go? I mean, I'm not saying go 44 to the half as they're ding-donging it, but once It was a race going into the first turn. It was over. Absolutely over. You would have bet on Life is Good at 1 to 1,000 at that point. You knew the race was over and he just kept on running. And now we have to look forward to what he does going down through the rest of the year. And they do think the Dubai World Cup is next. And we'll find out more about this horse. But and I'm sure we're going to touch on this a little bit more later in Flightline and Nick's Go. We are really blessed right now.
Bill, you're 100% correct. You know, the race was over going into that first turn. The thing that impressed me the most about Life is Good, you know, was two things. One was that he got the jump on Nick's Go and kind of pinned Nick's Go to the rail and basically made Nick's Go change his racing style, which he's not as comfortable. He's not as comfortable sitting off the pace as he is being in front and getting brave and improving. But we have to remember also for Life is Good, this was his first time going as far as he did. I mean, it's not unusual to see a horse falter going 9 furlongs, even if he's a phenomenal miler. But he didn't. He actually got stronger, as the race went on, or at least didn't get weak, from one panel to the next. He was really, really impressive going 23, 46, 110 in very machine-like way. I mean, just kept, you know, kicking off those fractions the way he did. And that, to me, that wasn't even Life is Good's best performance, I think, because he was still very green down the stretch. I mean, he was still looking around. His ears were still kind of, you know, pricked, and he was kind of looking around as to what was going on because he was doing it so easily. He was cruising at such a high speed and nobody was coming near him. The race was never in doubt. But I don't think he gave 100% even to win that race, to win the grade one that he did against, like you said, Horse of the Year, Nick's Go. He still has something left in the tank, which is really, really exciting for me. And Bill, you mentioned before about Life is Good and, you know, is he ever going to go against the next heavyweight now with Flightline? Are they going to, you know, get together down the road? It looks like from a scheduling standpoint for the next few months, they're not going to, but man, wouldn't that be great for racing if we can get Life is Good, at his peak performance, and Flightline at his peak performance, going mano a mano sometime this summer, and then again, hopefully in the Breeders' Cup in November. That's what we all want from an industry. We want to be talking about these types of races and these types of matchups, and not some of the other stuff that we're going to be talking about later. But you know, Life is Good ran such a phenomenal race, and Todd Pletcher, who, as you know, has had his hand on some really good horses in his career, was commenting after the race about, "This is the best horse I've ever trained." I mean, that in itself is like astonishing. That stopped the press is kind of a headline.
Yeah, and he's not a guy who's prone to hyperbole, I think. You know, people always used to make fun of Gary Stevens because he would say that every horse that he rode every year was like the greatest horse he's ever ridden. That's not Todd Pletcher. He doesn't usually say stuff like that. So I think when he gives that kind of praise to a horse, you gotta stand up and listen. Now, he's going to get a big test, I think, in the Dubai World Cup, going 1.25 miles for the first time. We're going to see how far he can quite stretch that speed. I agree that it would be a phenomenal marquee matchup with Flightline. I hope we get it. You know, I believe when I see it type thing, you know, because they both are going to have very abbreviated campaigns, I think, especially Flightline. Bill did the story about it, and he said that the most likely meeting place might be the Whitney, because apparently running in the Met Mile 3 months after the Dubai World Cup is a little bit too quick of a turnaround for Life is Good. But nevertheless, that would be incredible to watch. And especially since they're both such speedballs, they both have such gigantic speed. And I think that was kind of the disappointing thing, if there was one in the Pegasus, was that you didn't get that clash between Life is Good and Nick's Go. And it was kind of the inverse of the Breeders' Cup Classic, where everybody let Nick's Go on the lead and you didn't get any kind of early tussle with him. This time, I don't think it was quite that, because I think Life is Good kind of just ran them off their feet. Whereas I think in the Classic, it was a little bit of a concerted decision by the jockeys not to go with Nick's Go early. I think this time, if they had tried to go with Life is Good early, they would have gotten fried and ended up up the track. So it wasn't quite the same scenario, but I just, you know, I wish in some of these races you get that eyeball to eyeball matchup between the two main contenders, and we didn't get that. But nevertheless, it was a dazzling performance. And I think the Pegasus, you know, we talked about this in the past about the Pegasus. You know, it started out with a $16 million purse and it went down to $12 million, then it went down to $3 million. But honestly, the quality of the race, I don't think has significantly dropped. I think the winners of the race have still been extremely impressive. And I think you have gotten some pretty good matchups in that race. So, even though the initial idea to have it be this richest race in the world has gone by the wayside, I think it's still a marquee race on the calendar. And especially for horses like Nick's Go, who can run in it and still meet the breeding obligations of the year. And now Nick's Go will be retired before almost certainly being named Horse of the Year, an older male champion at the Eclipse Awards next week. But just a couple other things I wanted to mention from the weekend. Colonel Liam got his second straight win in the Pegasus Turf. Double for Irad Ortiz, who I mentioned that we talked to yesterday in the big two races on the Pegasus card. Speaker's Corner, it was nice to see him get his little breakout win. He was a horse that showed a lot of potential as a three-year-old. Didn't quite finish the year the way you would expect after he came back with that big allowance win at Saratoga, but he got his first grade stakes win, turning back Fearless in the Fred Hooper. And then at Santa Anita, we had the San Vicente Forbidden Kingdom, who's, we talked to Adrian Wallace in the past about how Coolmore's, they want American Pharoah to get that big grade one dirt horse that they haven't quite had yet. I think Forbidden Kingdom might be that horse. It's a little early to say. Don't really like to anoint these three-year-olds until they've gone two turns, but he turned back the trio of Baffert / Matakit horses in the San Vicente, got a 94 buyer. And then in the Oaklawn Stakes, the Southwest, Newgrange won another stake for Bob Baffert and again did not get any points for it. So now he's won two graded stakes without getting any Derby points. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Secret Oath, who won the Martha Washington, another stakes winner for Arrogate. It's a horse that I think a lot of people expected a little bit more of from his first crop, but now I think they're really starting to come around. So that's another stakes winner for him. That's what else stood out. What else stood out to me? Is there anything else from the weekend you guys wanted to mention?
Yeah, I just want to add on to some of the things you said. First of all, Secret Oath, Prima Wayne Lucas. How about that? Been a long time since we've seen him with a horse that looks like it could be the type that could go on to a race like the Kentucky Oaks. The other interesting thing about the weekend with the three-year-olds, and you touched on it, Joe, there's still this elephant in the room. We're now into February. As we speak, Bob Baffert cannot run horses in the Kentucky Derby. His horses have no Derby points, but not a single owner has budged yet that we know of anyways. And, what is Newgrange's future? Well, we know that his future is going to races like maybe the Rebel, the Arkansas Derby, the San Diego Derby. I don't mean that. What is his future as well as Corniche so far as can he run in the Kentucky Derby? And if he does, will Bob Baffert be the trainer? My prediction is that Baffert will be able to run in the Kentucky Derby because he's going to find a way to get in there through legal means. But that's just a guess on my part. But, this is a story with all Baffert's three-year-olds. It's going to keep going week after week after week. And going back to another topic from earlier, so far as when or if Flightline and Life is Good will meet. Well, first of all, both have to stay healthy. That's the big one. We know that if they stay healthy, they'll meet in the Breeders' Cup Classic. I do think, looking at how this thing shakes out, I do think there's a very good chance they will run in the Whitney. First of all, with Life is Good. We actually ran the horse. We have to have 3 months off. Okay, I'm not going to go scream about that like I have been for the last 2 years. It is what it is. But then the Whitney would be right on their wheelhouse so far as the timing. And so far as Flightline goes, you can see what they're doing here by running in the San Carlos. They're going one step at a time with the distances. And the reason why I think he's running the 7 furlong San Carlos is because you don't want to run beyond a mile and then come back to a mile in the Met Mile. Now, after they run in the Met Mile, John Sadler has said the two options are the Pacific Classic and the Whitney. Well, you don't want to go from a mile to a mile and a quarter in the Pacific Classic. You want to go from a mile to a mile and eighth in the Whitney, then to a mile and a quarter in the Breeders' Cup Classic. So keep your fingers crossed. I think there's a very good chance they meet in the Whitney.
And aside from the races that you guys mentioned, I'm not going to rehash it because you both did an excellent job of describing them. It's kind of funny that I'm going to talk about an A other than race at Tampa Bay over the weekend. But Todd Pletcher, who won some big races over the weekend, like we mentioned with Life is Good and Colonel Liam, et cetera. I think I found, and I probably shouldn't say this before our contest, but I think I found my Derby hot prospect, maybe even my first round draft pick. In Emmanuel, the More Than Ready colt that is owned by Windstar and Sienna et al. He ran in basically an A other than at Tampa Bay and won very impressively. Now he's 2 for 2. This was his second victory, and like I said, in two starts. He actually finished up his last quarter mile of that race in 23-2. I mean, it was explosive. And the only reason I even know about the race is we ran a horse in the race, and our horse went right up to him. Glider went right up to him at the top of the stretch, and I was like, oh, hot damn, we got a nice horse here, a Glider. And all of a sudden, Morales, who was riding Emmanuel, just kind of looked over and went, and, you know, the horse had another gear. I mean, it was really impressive, Emmanuel. And I'm not speaking out of school because I know TD and his Derby Dozen had Emmanuel, I think, like 5th or 6th even before that race. But that's a horse to watch, the More Than Ready Colt Emmanuel, who won just an A other than in Tampa Bay. But I'm sure he'll be running in the Fountain of Youth or the Tampa Bay Derby next time out.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. I mentioned before that the Keeneland Spring Meet is coming up April 8th through April 29th. Tickets for the Keeneland Spring Meet will go on sale beginning February 15th. All general admission, grandstand, and dining tickets must be pre-purchased online at tickets.keeneland.com. It was also announced this week, I don't think we're going to get to the graded stakes committee changes this week because there's too much news, but Keeneland's $1 million Toyota Bluegrass Stakes has been bumped back up to grade one status for the 2022 spring meet. This year's Bluegrass will run Saturday, April 9th, and will offer 170 points on the road to the Kentucky Derby. It's just one of those races I don't think ever should have been downgraded in the first place. Honestly, it was kind of like when they downgraded the hopeful to a grade two at Saratoga. Not quite that historic, but it's a grade one field every year. So I always thought that should have been a grade one. But back to a grade one this year. It's going to be one of the top preps Saturday, April 9th. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
They say the harder the work, the greater the reward. And this is hard work. It's the hours put in before dawn and after dark. It's the sacrifice, the sweat, the failure, and the faith. This is our industry. This is our life's work.
He was just put together like a machine, and he had a great mind. Everything about him was what you'd want.
Tis the Law pops the cork in the champagne. Tis the Law is going to win the first leg of the Triple Crown.
I've never seen him get tired.
Respect the Law. Tis the Law.
His structure is just perfect. His bone is perfect.
He's left the others behind. He's going to win the Run Happy Travers.
He's everything you would look for in a horse.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Coolmore. I mentioned earlier in the recap of the weekend's races, American Pharoah had a big winner this weekend with Forbidden Kingdom, the Grade 2 San Vicente Stakes. 94 buyer, second highest of any three-year-old so far this year. And his connections indicated that the Santa Anita Derby could be on the horizon. He's American Pharoah's 24th stakes winner and 13th graded stakes winner. So he's obviously been a big success at Sire. Hasn't had that grade one dirt horse yet, but Forbidden Kingdom, like I said, I think might be that horse. And also Practical Joke, who had a terrific freshman season. He had 3 new winners in 2 days, with Joke Meisters breaking his maiden by 8¾ lengths at Aqueduct, and then Comedic winning Gulfstream on Thursday, and Lightning Struck on Friday for Steve Asmussen. Practical Joke's 4 winners this year is 3rd best among all second crop sires this year. The Stallion sitting 2nd best, Cupid. No surprise there. So the Seth Fishman trial has really dominated the news for the last week or two. He's one of the last two big names that are going to be tried here, along with Jason Service. Can't imagine the Jason Service trial and all that's going to bring it into the light. But Seth Fishman, his case went to the jury yesterday. They had closing arguments. They might be deciding on the verdict right now as we speak. The jury is going to come back today, continue deliberations after an exhaustive 30-minute deliberation period yesterday from the jury. But I think the main story and the big shocking news of the week was on Monday when Seth Fishman was absent from court when closing arguments were set to begin. And it was a very strange, very weird, wild day in court because the judge sent the jury out and just talked to the lawyers. And the lawyer for Seth Fishman said that he was in the hospital. And it apparently his wife was in the court that day and was like visibly distraught and upset. There's been a lot of speculation on why that may be. We're not going to do that on this show. But the bigger news was from the wiretaps that came out last week and were reported on Monday. You know, there's a lot of wiretaps from the FBI. Most of them involve Seth Fishman. He's definitely a blabbermouth. Him and Jorge Navarro really like to talk. And I think that's what's going to do them in the end. But the bigger revelation, I think the biggest revelation was that he was apparently bragging about and claiming to Adrian Hall, who is a harness trainer who testified against him in this case, that he apparently had this big program for, according to him, had this big program that he created and ran for Sheikh Mohammed and Godolphin. Now, there's just to be clear, this is just hearsay. This is something that he said to a harness trainer. We don't know whether he was just saying that to try to impress her. We have no evidence yet that's the case. But that's a huge deal, even to have that alleged by somebody in this kind of trial. And it's a shocking thing to read in terms of this guy who just seems like such a loose cannon, weirdo, scumbag, honestly, to have that kind of association, he says, with Godolphin and Sheikh Mohammed, obviously one of some of the biggest names in racing and some of the most successful people in racing. But I don't know what to make of it. We would have to wait for a lot more evidence of that to come out to really comment on what that means and what it could mean going forward. But that was the big news of the week, was Seth Fishman disappearing from court, ending up in the hospital, and then the revelation that he was telling a harness trainer that he runs this alleged doping program for Godolphin. What do you guys think?
Yeah, Joe, let me take one point at a time because there's so much here to talk about. First of all, following the trial, it's 9:39 in the morning as we talk now. This won't be out until later in the afternoon. But I bet by the time this podcast is out, we'll have a guilty verdict in here. This was he got all these high priced lawyers, and this was the worst defense I've ever seen. Now that I'm such a legal expert from having all I do anymore is cover trials. And I used to watch Perry Mason when I was a kid. But here is basically his defense. I drugged these horses and sold the stuff, but it really wasn't that bad. This stuff wasn't that. I was just trying to treat the horses. That's like you get on trial for bank robbery and you say, yeah, I committed a bank robbery. But seriously, jury. Is bank robbery really such a bad thing? I mean,
like the bank had too much money. I was trying to help them.
That is his defense. Fishman disappearing. Look, I mean, we're all speculating. We're all gossiping and rumors and everything. We don't know. Obviously, that's going to come out in due time. That is a fascinating aspect to this case. And again, wherever that leads, I don't know. So far as Sheikh Mohammed goes, a couple things. Remember that. Prior to the hearing, there was this big in the trial. There was this big story in the Washington Post about Fishman, and it said right in there that he worked for Sheikh Mohammed with his camels. Now, I don't know if there's any rules against camel doping or whatnot, but that could be what this is all about. The other thing, and you're right, it is very explosive, but this isn't going anywhere, and here's why. It's nothing more than a he said thing. And Godolphin can just say, this guy's a crackpot. What are you talking about? And you know what? In some sense, that is correct. I mean, this is not a reputable guy. And he'll say, yeah, I did all these things for Sheikh Mohammed. They'll say he didn't. I think that'll be the end of that. And like so many other things, we can all just, speculate what's really going on here. But so far as is this going to, at the end of the day, be some huge explosive story where Sheikh Mohammed is ruled out of racing or something like that? I don't think there's any chance of that.
When your best defense is everyone else was doing it, so it was okay if I did it, or when your own attorney, defense attorney Maurice Cesar, says, to the jury, did my client do something to violate racing regulations? Yes, but he didn't have the intent to defraud. It's like, well, all right, you're kind of screwed right there if that's your best legal argument. And the other thing was, my client was trying to wean the horses off of this, so he was really trying to be a good guy. Well, who the hell put the horses on this stuff in the first place? You can't say, he was trying to do the right thing, kind of wink, wink. I'm trying to make the horses healthier by taking them off of this stuff, which, as you remember, I said, didn't really do very much. So, it wasn't really that. I mean, they were screwed from the get-go. There's no possible defense for this. There's so much mounting evidence against him, you know, not only from other people coming in and you know, and giving their statements, but also his own idiocy of being on a wire, you know, on the phone and actually talking about what he did, allegedly. I still say allegedly because it's not official yet, but it was a losing hand no matter what. I mean, you know, even the best attorney that we can think of couldn't have been able to get, you know, his client, Seth Fishman, through this kind of a situation without some kind of a guilty plea. So it was not a winning hand at all. I can't speak of Godolphin or the Sheik, but I can only tell you that there have been many times where I've gotten inquiries from other owners or trainers who have reached out and said, hey, so-and-so, fill in the blank, just said that you guys use XYZ product on your horse or use X, you know, Joe Schmo as your veterinarian. And I just want to double check that they actually, you know, what have you found? What's been working with them? And I go, I never worked with Joe Schmo. I never used these products, you know, or supplements on my horse. So sometimes in the hyperbole of selling, you know, salesmen will try to attach themselves to bigger outfits and with the idea of, well, if DJ Stable uses it, then it must be okay. You know, and they're reputable, so I'm going to go with them. And the same thing, I think, with the Sheik, if you kind of throw his name in there and say, well, look, you know, we're good enough to work for His Royal Highness. So obviously, you know, we have some gravitas and we know what we're doing. I think that might be part of it also, because, you know, let's call a spade. I mean, Fishman has not been truthful in a lot of the things that he's done. So to say that he worked with this outfit and then maybe somebody pressed him on, oh, which horses? Oh, I never said horses. I just said I worked with them. It was on his Camel Brigade, you know? Yeah, that's it. It's Camel Brigade. You know, I think it was kind of like one of those situations, but it is not going to end well for Seth Fishman, nor should it. I mean, let's not say, oh, poor Seth Fishman. He is in the hospital now. We should all feel okay. No, the guy's, you know, going to go to jail for a reason. And the reason is that he was not even that he was misbranding medication, but that he was abusing horses to do it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody's feeling bad for him. Certainly not on this show. But yeah, just to follow up on that, it was kind of funny reading the quotes, like the attempted defense of Seth Fishman from his lawyer. And then the prosecutor just gets it back up there for the rebuttal and says, he doesn't have much to work with. He's not a magician. He can't make the evidence disappear. So the prosecutor seemed very, very confident he's going to win this case. I agree with Bill that probably by the time this podcast comes out, there's going to be a guilty verdict. Not sure how much time he's going to get. But like Bill said in the past, this is why people generally don't try to take it to trial against federal prosecutors. You just, you know, if they're going to take it to trial, the federal prosecutor is going to take it to trial. They usually have a mountain of evidence against you. You're just some two-bit, you know, shyster, and you know, your lawyers, like it's not usually a match for federal prosecutors and the FBI. So I think that was a poor decision, which makes me wonder why Jason Service is also taking it to trial. I can't wait for that trial to start. Honestly, that's going to be even more explosive and interesting than this one. And yeah, he's not a guy that here's the thing that I take from it as well. And I've said this before, but Jesus, like, these guys are not criminal masterminds. We talked about this before with Jorge Navarro just talking and talking and talking on text messages. And this guy being what he seems like a total moron and a kook. These are the guys that were gaming the racing regulators for all these years. These are the guys that were cheating other trainers and other owners and drugging horses and not getting caught for all this time. Like when the FBI indictments first came out, you thought, well, these are criminal geniuses. Like these guys really, like, they game the system in a very smart and sophisticated way. No, they're morons. They're just idiots. And it does not reflect well on racing that these guys were getting away with this whole time. And that's really what's driven home to me as the more we hear the testimony and the wiretaps and all this stuff is that you really don't have to be that smart to game the system in racing. And, you know, that makes me wonder, like, what other, you know, two-bit criminals and schemers are out there right now taking advantage of racing's porous regulation system, because you can be damn sure that Seth Fishman, Jorge Navarro, Jason Servais were not the only people who were able to, you know, concoct this kind of scheme. That to me reflects poorly on racing. But I think it'll be satisfying when he gets sentenced, and it'll be even more satisfying once the Jason Servais trial starts. And maybe we'll learn even more. Maybe we'll even get even more big names. Because I wanted to mention one more thing, too, because Bill did this story the other day about this trainer in Ohio, Jason Davidovich, I think his name is. Am I right on that, Bill?
Maybe Damon something. I mean, but that's the thing. Maybe you're getting to this. He's such a small timer. We don't even really know what his name was. I mean, nobody ever heard of him.
Well, When we heard that there were going to be trainers that would be testifying against Seth Fishman, I thought we were going to get some big names, you know. But I guess nobody really wants to come forward and risk their business in racing if they are a big name. But that was one thing that I was a little bit disappointed about. We only got him and then Adrian Hall, who I mentioned before, the harness trainer.
So, Joe, wait, just to go back to what you were saying, I have a question for you. So would you have felt better if these guys were like, you know, Mensa geniuses, yes, and they were gaming the system?
Yes.
Why?
Absolutely. Because the idea is that, you know, in any like show like The Wire or any of these like procedural dramas, usually the criminal has to be kind of smart because the system around him or her is robust and is, you know, right, and is able to catch criminals and to flush out, you know, schemers from our society. Racing clearly cannot do that if these guys were able to get away with this for so long. I do think that it reflects badly on racing that these guys were two-bit criminals and were able to get away with this. Don't you?
Well, I guess the only thing I would say is, like, when you look, and I'm going to get in big trouble for this, but you look at our industry, and there aren't a lot of rocket scientists in the industry. Sure. I mean, it's not like me included. It's not like that we're all running around going from the Davos event in Switzerland over to NASA, and then we're going to the races on the weekend. You know, we're a bunch of knuckleheads. That's why we're kind of in this business.
Yeah, I guess. But I would hope that the regulators and the cops on the beat would be a little bit smarter and more sophisticated than guys like this, is what I'm saying.
Right. No, I understand. But most of the regulators and stewards in our industry are former trainers, jockeys. Again, they're not like regulators that are coming in from their law practices and setting up shop here. I mean, it's not like the NFL. If you look at the roster of the people who are officiating in the NFL, it's like really, really smart, white collar, you know, individuals for the most part. It's not a lot. You don't see a lot of former, you know, running backs that are all of a sudden are being linesmen or head referees, you know, after getting hit in the head a bunch of times. Again, I know I'm going to get in big trouble for all this, but my point is that, like, this is such an unregulated industry. There's no barrier to entry to get into the business as far as like, oh, I have to have a, you know, other than to get like a trainer's license, which we've all seen is a joke because of who's gotten the trainer's license and how they haven't lost it after 80, 100, you know, violations that we talked about, you know, for weeks and weeks. So it's not like there's an IQ test as a barrier of an entry. It's basically, I love horses and then I get into the business of horses and hilarity ensues. I didn't expect, I mean, Bill talked about it, you know, months ago, and I'll never forget his comment about, you know, this is the gang that couldn't shoot straight. I mean, this is really a bunch of knuckleheads that were, you know, in essence, street smart enough to figure out that there's something that will help their horses, you know, in performances, allegedly. And then were dumb enough to brag about it.
Yeah, I guess. But like, these are guys that were winning the biggest race, some of the biggest races in the world. Like, it's not like these were guys that were winning a bunch of 10,000 claimers at Thistledown. You know, Jason Servais, right, if Maximum Security didn't get disqualified, would have been a Kentucky Derby winning trainer. Jorge Navarro won a ton of grade ones. He won the Golden Shaheen. Like, these are guys who are right, the top of the game, and they don't know not to talk about the crimes they're allegedly doing on text message.
Right.
That's the problem. I take your point, John, but it's still depressing.
Oh no, it's depressing as an industry that it happened. I mean, I totally get that, but it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't, you know, any industry doesn't surprise me for that matter. I mean, when greed and money come, you know, get involved. And the other thing I'll say about, like, you know, Navarro and Jason Servais winning big races,
I almost feel like that was almost by accident. Like they were winning all the claiming races in the area and they were staying under the radar. And it wasn't until they got a couple of horses that actually had some talent on top of the performance enhancing drugs. And that's almost why they, you know, that they got flushed out, because all of a sudden they were winning graded stake races. And it's okay for the industry when these guys win $10,000 claimers or they win the never win two for 25 at Monmouth. Nobody gives a crap. It's when they start winning, you know, graded stake races and all of a sudden their horses start showing up in the big races. That's when, you know, everyone in the industry goes, wait a second, that's not cool. You know, it's okay for you to steal, you know, bread from the smaller tracks. But when you're starting to affect like what's going on with my horses in the graded stake races, that's when it has to stop. And I think these guys, they became so successful in their horses and they started getting better horses. And then like they couldn't stop at that point.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Lane's End. Lane's End Stallion of the Week this week is Unified. Multiple graded stakes winning son of Candy Ride stands for $10,000 in 2022. With his first crop at three-year-olds on a track this year, his top performers include multiple stakes winner Unified Report, who's entered into stakes at Delta this week, as well as last year's debutante stakes winner Behave Virginia and Run Happy Ellis Park Juvenile stakes winner Roger McQueen. Be right back after this message from Lane's End.
Honor AP showed a lot of talent in the sense that he got over the ground really nicely with a huge stride, a length of stride you can't believe. And then you look down at the stopwatch and you go, oh my gosh, he actually did that. I think Honor AP was the most talented of the three-year-old colts that I had with Giacomo, Tiago, AP Warrior. This confirmation is just perfect for a racehorse. He was one of those athletes that was just ahead of his class.
With some of the fullest fields in the country and quality racing year-round, there's never been a better time to reap the rewards of breeding and racing in Kentucky. Purse money in Kentucky is at an all-time high, as is average purse per race, outpacing California, Florida, and New York. Kentucky breds. Breed them. Raise them. Race them. We all win.
The TDN Writers Room is sponsored by the Kentucky Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders. Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund is a unique program to benefit owners and their Kentucky sired Kentucky Fold runners. Its aim is to upgrade the overall quality of racing in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Big weekend for Kentucky breds, as it usually is. Complete sweep of the Pegasus races. Life is Good, Colonel Liam, and Regal Glory, who we didn't mention, won the first edition of the Pegasus Filly and Mare Turf. Were all bred in Kentucky, and they all sold at a Keeneland sale. The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save you taxes. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. So we are beyond thrilled this week to welcome the three-time Eclipse Award-winning jockey, Irad Ortiz Jr., fresh off the Pegasus win. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for having me here.
We're super excited to have you. You're a big get for this show. Let's start with the big horse. Let's start with Life is Good. You know, I hesitate to ask jockeys to compare horses because they're so different and rank them. But I just wonder, I think of you as more of a turf jockey. You're more of a kind of a closing type jockey. Have you ever ridden a horse with his kind of speed, or is he unique?
I ride some speed horses, but like this one, he can stay the whole time, whole distance. You know, that's the difference between him and some other horses. Like, some other horses can go fast. They only can go fast and hold that speed for 6 furlongs, 1 mile. This horse, you know, the other day he going mile and eight. He was going fast, good fractions, and he just keep going.
I want to ask a follow up question on that. Was there any question in your mind that he was going to be able to beat Nick's Go to the Lead, or did you know that he was going to be faster early?
Honestly, I know my horse is fast, but I never thought I'm going to be on top. I'm going to be on the lead by 3-4 lengths. Like, I never thought that going to happen. I mean, but that's racing. That was the when the gates open, everything changed. You know, after the gates open, everything changed. I mean, the instruction can change quick. And that was what happened. We break, and he broke good. I let him roll to the first turn, and after that, I ended up on the lead. So I just go use my judgment. He was feeling good. He was going relaxed. He was going the right way. So I just don't mess with him. I just let him do his thing, and he keep going.
Hey, Rod, thanks for joining us. And we asked Flavien Prat the same question about his great horse, Flightline. As a jockey, does it feel different riding a horse like this versus, you know, just a good horse, a horse that might be a grade two, grade three stakes level horse? And if so, how is it different? And, you know, what is it like to be on aboard something that looks like it's just a rocket ship like this?
Honestly, if I ask another horse to do what he does, the way he do it, I mean, I it's really, really hard to find a horse that still finish the way he finished, you know. That's the only difference between him and some other horses. If you have some other horses going that fast early on, they're probably going to die by the quarter pole. They're gonna go by you like nothing. And this horse just stays with the same speed. He just hold. He keep going. Like, he stay and he hold his speed. So that's making him so special.
Yeah, I wanted you to think back to when you first came to ride in America. Weirdly, I remember your first win. It was like on a sloppy track day at Belmont, if I'm remembering it correctly. Yeah. And I was like, who's this kid? And then you kind of took off that summer, the next summer. Did you always have the vision that you would be where you are today? Or do you think young IRAD would be a little bit surprised at how much success you've had?
Honestly, I'm grateful. Thank God I'm what I am. I work hard, but when you get here, you got a lot of good jockeys and you just work for what you want. I work hard, but you never know what's going to happen. Is the opportunity going to get, you know, you're going to have the opportunity right away or not. Sometimes take you 10 years to they start give you a chance. Sometimes you get 5, 6, 7, 8 years. So, I mean, I always have big dreams, but I never beat on myself like, no, I have to be there. Never was like that. Just work and step by step. If they give me the opportunity and try to do the right thing every time they give me the opportunity, and that's the way we did it. That's the way we did it. We they give me those chances and we, thank God, we are right there, you know, like they give me a good chance and we win the race. So that's why get you there a little faster. But I mean, my agent do a great job, Steve Rochin. He do a great job. Since I start working with him, everything going change a little bit. I got better numbers. I got better chances, got better horses, so everything works. It's like a teamwork, and everything works together. You know, it's you need a little bit of everything. You need good agent. You need to do the right thing. You need to ride good horses. You need to ride good, and you need the opportunity from the owners and the trainers.
Erad, the one race of a couple that you haven't won yet is obviously the Kentucky Derby. You don't need to tell me how much you want to win the Derby. I'm sure it's something that's very important to you. But could you assess your chances this year? You have Mo Donegal, who won the Remsen for you. If you think that maybe he's going to be your top horse, if there's a couple others that you're high on, how does the 2022 Derby look for Erad Ortiz Jr.?
Honestly, the horse Mo Donegal is really nice. He's improving. Last time he improved a lot, I think, from the race before. And it's too early. I will say it's a little too early to answer that question. I'm sure there's going to be some more young horses coming out from here, from East Coast, from Midwest or whatever. I'm sure they're going to come up. I mean, some horses, it's a little too early. We're only in February right now. But I feel good. I think we look good. I just hope I get on the right one, honestly, because I wanna win that race. But so far, Mo Donegal looks great to me. You know, honestly, I don't have any particular horse. I say this is my Derby horse because you never know what's happening on the way. You know, honestly, it's pretty far from there. So
we talked to Jose during the summer at Saratoga, and I asked him this about all the preparation that goes in to winning on the big days. Everybody sees you in the winner's circle. They see you on the track, but they don't necessarily see the things behind the scenes that go into it. You know, with the work in the morning on the off days, I see racing behind you right now on your off day. So can you talk about what it takes both physically and mentally to get to that point where you're able to perform on those big stages?
I mean, keep up the good work. I mean, don't think because you get there, you just can just rest. I mean, if you know, I make it. No, it's not like that. You gotta keep working hard. Every time, I mean, when you make it, you gotta work harder to stay on, to stay where you are. You know, it's not easy. You got how many 50 jockeys good as you, and they want the same thing that you want. You want to be on the top, and they want to be on the top. They want the good horses, you want the good horses. So it's not easy. It's a hard work. It's a lot of dedication, a lot of responsibility. So I stay working. That's the only thing I would say. You know?
But no, I mean, I want to know, like, what specifically you do to get into race shape? Like, were you reading the racing form on your off days? Like, what is a day like for you to prepare?
I just do what I do every day. I follow my horses. I handicap the races. I watch some replays. I do my personal training, try to stay healthy, try to stay in one piece. I mean, be fit for the races so you can do your best out there. And I just prepare myself that one more and more. I just want to win every time I go out there. I'm still hungry, you know, that's the whole thing.
Rad, 2021 was a great year for you, but it was also a year where you had the controversy of the suspension, the 30-day suspension from the Irish stewards around the time of the Remsen. I'll put the question this way. Did you learn anything from that?
Of course. I mean, we learned from our mistakes. I mean, honestly, I made a mistake. It was not intentional, but I'm grateful. I'm glad the kid is okay. I mean, that's the main thing. The rest is just we gotta work with whatever happened. You know, the steward do their job. I'm agree with them 100%. They give me 30 days, and I take it. I take it right away. I don't say nothing because I know. I made a mistake, so I pay for it. That's why they there. You know, they out there to watch everybody to try to keep all the jockeys safe. And that's what they do. They do their job, and I'm agree with that. I don't have no problem with that, and I just learned from that. I made a mistake. I mean, the most of the time, I ride every single day, and that thing probably happened to me. That was the first time happened to me, but I learned from it. I mean, never expect that going to happen, but it happens. So what can I say? I'm not perfect. I'm a human, and I just turned the page. I learned from it and turned the page, and try to don't do it again.
Right. I mean, kind of in that same topic is like, I think that you, for whatever reason, are like a polarizing jockey. You have these diehard fans that love you and support you. And then you have a lot of detractors, I think, on social media and stuff too, that don't like you and maybe don't like your brother. Do you ever listen to any of that, both positive and negative? Do you listen to any of that, or you just tune it out?
Not really. I just try to, like, honestly, on media, just to repost whatever the people say about me, the good things, and that's it. I don't pay attention on the other guys because I don't want to help me to do nothing, you know. I want my fans, the people who like me, the people who inspire me to do better, you know. So I don't pay too much attention. And I know it's going to be some people, they're going to have, I mean, I'm not the greatest jockey on their eyes, you know. I understand that. Not everybody gonna like me, you know. But at least whoever like me, I take it and I get that. I get the inspiration from a lot of people, so I feel so good. I got a lot of fans. And I love it. I love it. I enjoy my career so far. I mean, I've been winning a lot of good races. And I enjoy it. Every time I go out there and people want a picture with me, they want to stay close to me. So I just enjoy the moment, honestly. I don't know how long it's going to take me. So I just enjoy and live the moment.
Right.
Red, I was hoping you could talk a little bit more about what it's like to ride against your brother. You guys go against each other 7, 8, 9 races a day. When you're in front and you look over your shoulder and there's at the 16th pole and someone's coming up on your outside and it's Jose, does the adrenaline, do you get a little more pumped, a little bit more, boy, I want to win this than if it's some other jockey?
Honestly, when you go by the 16th pole, no matter, you don't try to look to who is. Mm-hmm. I just want to win. I don't care who's coming, you know. I just want to win, honestly. That's the way I see it. That's the way I feel, and that's the way I do it. I just ride my races. If I look and I see somebody that I think can beat me, and I think it's time to go, I don't care who is. I just want to beat him. I just want to win the race. Honestly, Like, that's why we said we are brothers, but inside the track is something different. It's something very different. I ride for myself. I ride for my trainers, for my owners. I'm going to try to do the best for us. So I don't even get on my mind that my brother is on the race, honestly. That's the way we work. So people are going to think something different, but that's not the way it happens. So they can think whatever they want, but we all, both of us do our job separately on the track. Outside of the track, we are brothers. I love him, but in the track, it's different, way different.
Well, you guys, the success speaks for itself for you and Jose. Irad, we're glad to see you back on the racetrack. Congratulations on the Pegasus and best of luck the rest of the year, my man.
Thank you very much, Irad. Thank you very much.
Talk to you. The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. As this week's Green Group Guest of the Week, Irad Ortiz Jr. will receive a free one-hour tax consultation. Learn more at greenco.com. We'll be right back after this message from The Green Group.
Why do the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisor? We simply save them money and know how to make them more successful. Over the past 40 years, founder Leonard Green has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by XBTV, the XBTV Workout of the Week, which we're probably showing right now, if I know our crack production crew, is 8 rings, and as time goes by, working in company on Monday, going 4 furlongs and 49-1, 8 rings, ran against top company in California last year, including a second place finish in the Bing Crosby, while as time goes by, it was a 5-year-old mare for Coolmore, won her last start in the Grade 3 La Cunada Stakes on New Year's Day at Santa Anita. She's definitely a top contender in the filly and mare division out in California. You can see them going head-to-head in this workout. You can see all the workouts that you need to see for the upcoming Derby season, or Derby preps, at btv.com. So we finally got a conclusion to the Bob Baffert and Naira hearings. There was a 5-day hearing on Bob Baffert's, quote, detrimental conduct charges levied by Naira. It closed last Friday. Just to quote T.D. Thornton's story here, because T.D. did a great job reporting on this last week. Naira's attorney argued that the Hall of Fame trainer has trashed the sport with such an unprecedented litany of medication violations that Naira needs to be allowed to punish him. While Baffert's lawyer countered that the real extraordinary aspect of the case involves vendetta-based accusations that could result in draconian sanctions Naira has never before attempted to impose on any other trainer. Quote, Bob Baffert is not a cheater, the trainer's attorney, Craig Robertson, told hearing officer O. Peter Sherwood during the January 28th, it's my birthday, proceeding. Naira used Bob Baffert when it was convenient for them. Now they want to kick him out, kick him to the curb. Your Honor, Mr. Baffert's career is in your hands, and that is not an exaggeration. It 100% is an exaggeration, because he's going to be able to race in California and Arkansas, and Dubai, and all these other places. If he doesn't get to race in New York, that's not the end of his career. Nevertheless, Naira's lawyer, Hank Greenberg, put his closing argument this way. The statement of charges in this case charges Baffert with 3 violations, that he is a detriment to the sport of thoroughbred racing, that he is a detriment to the safety of horses and jockeys, and that he's a detriment to Naira and its business. We respectfully submit that we've established our case, we met our burden, and we respectfully urge you to blah, blah, blah. So lots to talk about, lots of opinions to have on this case. And it really is, like, I honestly think the most polarizing thing in racing right now. You know, if you read some of the comments, like there was an op-ed this week in the TDN, like really going to the mat for Bob Baffert, which I thought was completely ridiculous op-ed, but that's just my personal opinion. But if you look at the comments, it's like either you're a moron, how could you support Bob Baffert like this, or right on, Bob Baffert's getting railroaded by this industry. And there's really no room for nuance in this discussion, apparently. You know where I stand? I think that Bob Baffert overall has had his chances to get right and to play by the rules and hasn't been able to do it. And I think that that racing would be better off without him. I don't think he's going to be banned overall. And that's, you know, I'm not going to go crazy about that. Every jurisdiction has its right to do whatever they want with him. But I think that there is some room for nuance in that you don't have to compare Bob Baffert to the Jason Services and the Jorge Navarros of the world, but you also don't have to be an apologist for Bob Baffert and say that, you know, all these medication positives are just, you know, coincidental contamination overages and make all these excuses for Bob Baffert. I think that that's patently ridiculous. I think he's, you know, his record is such that you can't just explain away everything. You might be able to explain away one or two overages, the betamethasone thing from Medina Spirit. If you want to say that was accidental, sure, I'll buy that. But overall, over time, he's broken the rules over and over again. He's had a poor safety record for years and years. He's had a higher breakdown and fatality rate than other trainers in California for years and years. The facts are what they are. I don't know where this case is going to go. I'm curious to hear what Bill thinks specifically, and John as well, about what's next and whether and what the likelihood is that Naira is going to be able to suspend him. Probably not going to be able to ban him for life. I don't even know if they're going for that. But let's hear from Bill and John.
Yeah, first of all, it's funny what you said, Joe, about him being such a polarizing figure. And I'm not the only writer in this that falls into this category. I've been covering some of this. And I'll write a story and we'll hear feedback. Someone will say, why is Bill Finley taking it so easy on Bob Baffert? Why is he giving him a pass? Why is he an apologist for Baffert? Then someone else will look at the exact same story and says, why is Bill Finley and the TDN out to ruin this wonderful man who has done absolutely nothing wrong? You just whatever. You can't do anything about that. You know, the lot of the hearing, I guess we don't call it a trial, we call it a hearing, just brought back, you know, things that we have already known. Unlike the Fishman thing with like the Sheikh Mohammed, et cetera, there were no like, there were no aha moments. It was just rehashing everything that we've already heard. And one side saying, again, like the readers, that he's a really good guy who's being wrongly maligned by the vendetta at Naira from the Board of Trustees that are horse owners and tired of getting beat by him, to the Naira guy saying he's the worst thing that ever happened to horse racing. I do think, again, this is just guessing, but at the end of the day, I do think he will be suspended by the New York Racing Association, probably for, my guess would be for 2 years, like what Churchill did, just because, you know, really, is this a completely impartial hearing? Well, Naira wants you to believe that it is. But, you know, it's isn't this kind of judge, jury and executioner? You know, they're putting him on trial. And granted, the Sherwood guy is an independent person, but he's going to make his recommendation to an advisory board, which is made up of various people with connections to Naira. I can't see him not getting suspended at the end of the day, but we shall find out.
And we've gotten ourselves into a society where nothing is gray anymore. It's either black or white. It's either, you know, you're on one side or you're against him, or you're for him or you're on the other side. There's no middle ground. It's not a matter of, well, do I think that he, you know, made a couple of mistakes, but overall that doesn't happen. It's just not the way it is. And I don't agree with when people come out and say, you know, we're in a cancer culture and those types of things.
Next time I hear cancel culture or woke culture, I don't know.
Yeah. It's not it's nonsense, but it was used as, you know, as an alibi by Bob Baffert about saying, I didn't do anything wrong. It's that the society is against. And then all of a sudden it was like, oops, I guess I did do something wrong, but I didn't know, you know. So it's kind of like this constant just it's not my fault. It's not my fault. And then doubling down. And then when you get caught, it's like, oh, well, that maybe that happened, but it wasn't on my watch. It wasn't me. You know, you're on one camp or the other. And unfortunately, there's no common ground on this. You know, Bill and I talked about it last week, Joe, again, about, you know, Naira ultimately has the ultimate say in who they want to allow to do business, you know, within their facility. So is it a sham? Yeah, it's kind of a circus, you know, right now, a kangaroo court, if you will. And ultimately they're going to come down with a decision. And if it's against Baffert, his lawyers are going to go back and fight it again in a higher court. And it's just going to be the same nonsense, you know, and until they either come to an accord and make an agreement, you know, amongst each other, amongst the two parties about what can happen, or it's just going to continue to get kicked down the road to higher and higher courts. And then it'll be a self-fulfilling prophecy that all of a sudden we're 2 years from where we are right now. And the guy hasn't been able to race in New York. And that's kind of what New York wanted in the first place. So if I sound annoyed, it's not just because of my dog. It's also because, like, I think all of us just want to move on from this story. And And unfortunately, Baffert is a polarizing figure in our industry. When you ask the average person to name something, somebody, some horse in our industry, more times than not, they're going to say Bob Baffert. And I can tell you that the layperson, when they say Bob Baffert, it's not him winning the Triple Crown a couple of times or winning the Derby or winning all these big graded stake races that comes to mind. It's all of this stuff that's going on right now. And it puts a really bad spin on our already, you know, tainted industry.
Yeah. And just to pick up on that point of having no nuance, like, yeah, it's like you either have to think that Bob Baffert is the most evil guy to ever, you know, come into racing and win a race in this sport. Or you think he's getting completely railroaded and he's clean and he's, you know, all these owners and trainers and everybody are just jealous of him. I don't think either of those things are true. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. I fall into the camp that he is more trouble than he is worth in racing. And he's had chance after chance after chance to do the right thing and to play by the rules and has not been able to do it over a decades long career. But nevertheless, do I think he's the biggest problem that racing has? No. But like John says, he's the most high profile person in racing, and he continues to embarrass the sport on these big stages. And it's like, I don't know how much bigger of a stage you can get than the Kentucky Derby. And like I said at the time, do I think that overage and that potential DQ was the biggest deal in the world? Do I think the Medina Spirit won the race because he was juiced? Of course not. But for him to even have that risk, for him to even be as careless as he was to have that happen on the biggest stages in the sport, is just a risk that racing cannot afford at this time. And that's kind of what was some of the arguments from Naira was about the social license of racing to keep going. And when you have a guy who has a higher breakdown rate than pretty much everybody in California and who has these drug positives in these major grade one races, like John says, people aren't going to hear anything but that headline that the Kentucky Derby winner failed a drug test. That's all they hear. And from a public that is already ready to kind of kick racing out of the public sphere, I don't think that is something that racing needs to be risking at this point. Sorry, that's just the way I feel. And it's not as if it's this one thing and I'm making him a scapegoat for this one drug positive. It's a decades long record of poor safety and poor drug violations. And I'm honestly exhausted. I feel like John, you were saying the same thing. I'm just tired. I'm tired of the Bob Baffert melodrama. I think that racing needs to just come down on him one way or the other, but it's never going to happen because we don't have that unified force in racing. It's just going to be, well, he's allowed to race here. He's not allowed to race here. So he's suing these people. We still don't know what's going to happen with the Churchill Downs and the Derby thing. Bill alluded to that before, which reminds me, why the hell have we still not gotten a ruling on the Kentucky Derby? How are we? Seriously, how are we sitting here 9 months later and the horse still has not been either DQ'd or kept up? What is going on with the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission? Why haven't they even held a hearing on this? As far as I know, that's some Mickey Mouse stuff that I think. Racing, it just looks so ridiculous that Churchill Downs banned Bob Baffert for 2 years for a horse that we don't even know is going to get disqualified. We've heard nothing. We've heard zero news on that front. And yet we have this constant Bob Baffert back and forth with Naira and I think eventually with Churchill Downs. What is taking so long,
Joe,
guys?
I want to pick up on that because you made an excellent point. And it gets even more ridiculous than I think even you said, because during the Baffert hearing at Naira, I wasn't covering it that day, a TD was, but I guess is in a back and forth with the lawyers and whatever. They said, oh, yeah, by the way, there's a hearing in Kentucky on February 7th. Everybody is, really? This is the first we've ever heard of this. Now, this came out of the Naira hearing. February 7th is 5 days from now. Is there a hearing or not? The Kentucky Racing Commission, can you say something? I mean, can you say, yes, there is a hearing? No, there is not a hearing. Or we're thinking about having a hearing. You know, just complete silence. I'm sure they're lawyering up like crazy and they're all worried about getting sued and countersued and this and that. But yeah, I mean, does it get any more ridiculous than this? Is there a hearing on February 7th or not? The Kentucky Racing Commission, if anybody is watching this, damn it. Answer that question.
Yeah. And well, I struggle to think of any other sport where it would be like this. Like if say like in the NBA finals, the Lakers won and LeBron James tested positive for an illegal drug. And then 9 months later, they were like, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens with the title. We'll get around to it eventually. It's just yet another one of those things that just proves that racing is a completely unserious sport at the highest levels even. And yeah, like you can't even imagine another situation, another sport where this would happen, where there would be such ambiguity and such secrecy about whether or not they're going to get disqualified from the biggest event in the sport. It's just complete nonsense.
Thank God we have USADA coming in to save the day.
That's right.
Oh, crap.
Speaking of which, Bill, I don't know if you saw the story, Sid Fernando's column today in the paper. He was a little critical of you about the constitutionality or anti-constitutionality of Heisa, and talking about how constitutionality matters and all that. You want to respond to that?
Well, yes and no. I glance at it. I mean, I don't pay attention to that kind of stuff, but and I probably do need to read that. But I think he totally was taking what I wrote completely out of context. If and again, I apologize if I'm taking out of context what he took out of context, because I didn't really read the story. But he was critical of me because I wrote something about how people don't care about whether it's constitutional or not. Well, they don't. I mean, I'm not saying it is constitutional or not constitutional. I don't know. It's up to the lawyers. I have no opinion on that, but I stand by that. You know, the fan in the stands, the honest owner like John Green, who is getting beat by the Jorge Navarros of the world, the jockey club, people in racing, they don't care whether it's constitutional or not, because that's not in their ballpark or anything they're worried about. They just want this thing to come in and get going and have some teeth. Now, having said that, I couldn't care less about this now, because without USADA, it's a nothing. It's just an absolute nothing. Just we shouldn't, unless USADA comes aboard on this show or right, we shouldn't waste 5 seconds with this, because whether it's constitutional or not, who gives a crap, because the thing is completely toothless.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, and it seemed like a column that maybe Sid had in the can like months ago before USADA dropped out. I think we've said before, it's just beside the point. You know, it's beside the point of whether or not the current system in racing is working and whether or not you need someone to come in from outside and take care and clean up our dirty business. The constitutionality stuff, like, Sid's not a constitutional scholar. None of us are constitutional scholars. I don't think, you know, the people who are suing to stop Heisa from coming into being are constitutional scholars. I think it's just an easy thing to say because you don't want this program to be put into place. That's my opinion.
Yeah, Joe, thank you, because you brought up something else I'd like to talk. And again, going back to what was written and whatnot, you know, it very well could be unconstitutional. First of all, again, I don't know. I didn't go to Harvard Law School. You don't know, and Sid Fernando doesn't know. But at the end of the day, I will stand by this. The people that are trying to block Heisa, I don't think they care whether it's constitutional or not. It's all about they want to maintain the status quo. And I think all three of us are in agreement, and everybody who is sane is in agreement that the status quo sucks. And these people need to look in the mirror and say, what the hell am I thinking here, that this sport has so many problems that the TDN writers room spends 3 hours every week talking about everything that's wrong with the sport. And yet not only is that okay, or either that's okay, or I have a solution to fix it. It's not okay, and I have a solution to fix it, but it's like Trump with the healthcare. I'll get back to you back to you on the solution to fix it. Just I'll get back to you on that. So yeah, the National HBPA, I do not believe for 1 second they give a crap whether or not this is constitutional. It was their loophole to try to strike down something that, if USADA hadn't jumped out, would have been a very important and very beneficial thing to the well-being of the sport. And for the life of me, I don't understand how anybody can be against this.
We're going to have a big, beautiful plan to clean up racing in a few weeks. We'll be revealing it. Yeah, it's so ridiculous. But I kind of wanted to.
That's a great Joe Biden, Jeff, by the way.
It was Trump. Oh, this is Joe Biden.
Okay, I know, Bill.
If I were Biden, I would just fall asleep. That's it. Equal opportunity here on this show. But I kind of wanted to somehow segue from that into TD, another story that TD did. Pretty busy week for TD. On Sunday, he wrote a story in the TDN titled, "Like Baseball, Racing Will Have to Come to Grips with Unsettling Era." And it's kind of, it's in the same vein. And it mentioned that Bill's favorite, maybe juicer, David Ortiz, was elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame because he had never officially, I mean, apparently he flunked a test early on, but maybe it was environmental contamination. Someone pissed in the stall. But his point was that, you know, his record, his drug record is not all that different from Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds. And Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds are two of the greatest baseball players of all time based on their records. But their names were in the Mitchell Report and all this stuff about PEDs was surrounding them. So they're not in the Hall of Fame. There's other guys like Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa and these guys who really dominated the sport throughout the 90s and 2000s who are still not in the Hall of Fame. He was kind of making the point that where do you draw the line? Where do you say this guy is dirty, this guy is clean? And he also made a good point that maybe other sports should do what racing does and elect people into the Hall of Fame while they're still playing. And that way, you know, you can't cop out later on. I think what people really have a problem with, well, I personally have a problem with the Baseball Hall of Fame controversy is that it's just so easy to get on your high horse now and be sanctimonious about these guys and say, well, they shouldn't be allowed in the Hall of Fame because they were doing all these drugs. When 99% of the writers who vote for the Baseball Hall of Fame were not writing stories in the 90s and 2000s about how awful all these guys and what cheaters they were. You know, they were doing the rah-rah stuff. So it's a little disingenuous now to say, to, you know, get on your soapbox about how bad these guys were and how they can't be in the Hall of Fame. And that's kind of how, you know, racing has that kind of same issue where there's so much cheerleading, I think, for guys when they were having success, like Jason Service and Jorge Navarro and Bob Baffert. Again, not comparing him to those two, but I'm saying there's a lot of cheerleading for Bob Baffert in the industry. And now I think a lot of people have gone totally the other way on that. And Bill's a big baseball fan, so I'm going to let him talk eventually. But it's an interesting discussion about where do you draw the line? Is NYRA going to start having hearings for every trainer that flunks a drug test in a major race? Are they going to do these long hearings and try to ban all these trainers? Or is Bob Baffert and Marcus Vitale and Wayne Potts the extent of it? Where do you draw the line? Where, without that unified body, without that unified drug enforcement that we were talking about, it's up to the individual tracks and the individual jurisdictions to make these decisions. Where do you draw the line? Do you just say, forget it, we don't have the wherewithal to charge all of these guys and ban all these guys? Or do you go even further and so people can't say, well, you're going after these guys, but not these guys? What do you think?
Well, you know, it's interesting. And like baseball, I mean, there's no right answer in baseball. I mean, you've got people that will say that Bonds and Clemens are, it's a disgrace that they're not in the Hall of Fame, and other people would never vote for him. And yet, hey, do I think David Ortiz took steroids? Yeah, I do, actually. But, you know, he's my guy. So, you know, get him into the Hall of Fame. I guess when it comes
to right here on the writer's room, as usual.
Yes, when it comes to horse racing, I guess what you'd be talking about here are Eclipse Awards and maybe even the Hall of Fame. I don't know where else this would come up. And, you know, again, I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about this. And fortunately, it hasn't come up that often because the Eclipse Awards and the Hall of Fame are still dominated by people who I think 99% of them are straight shooters. But having said that, I think to me, unless there's proof or unless somebody has been charged, I think I would put my suspicions aside. And a good example is, was it 2019? Correct me if it was a different year, that Maximum Security was the three-year-old champion. I voted for him. Did I think at the time he was on drugs? Absolutely 100%. Yeah. And in hindsight, allegedly, he was on drugs, according to what the federal government has charged. But without any proof coming out, I decided to vote for him. There have been others that I'm suspicious of, maybe not as ironclad suspicious as I was of maximum security. But that's my my take on it. Now, I know we've talked about this before, but you know, it does bring into mind the people that are writing that they're not voting for any Baffert horses, even Corniche, who should, without the Baffert factor, would be virtually a unanimous champion.
But my bigger question is about kind of the enforcement aspect of it. Is like, do you just stop at Bob Baffert if you're Naira and Churchill Downs, or do you go after everybody who fails a drug test? That I think is the bigger question, and kind of the more meaningful question in terms of who's allowed to participate in the sport. Because the Eclipse stuff and the Hall of Fame stuff is all ceremonial. It's about who's allowed to participate. Is this the extent of it, or do we go after everybody that we have suspicions about or fails a drug test? Sorry,
well,
go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. Well, John, go ahead. You can answer. Take that one. No, well, I was going to say, we should go after. And again, that's a tough thing. Do we go after? You know, should Naira say I'm suspicious of 50 people and put 50 people up for trials or hearings? Of course not. But the answer to that question is that the sport has not done nearly enough to go after people or to try to catch people that arouse suspicion. And again, horse racing didn't catch these people. The FBI did. So, and again, without USADA, there's going to be no change in that. But should we clamp down and go after more people than we are? Maybe that doesn't mean putting them on trial at Naira, but it does mean lots of other things like out of competition testing, putting cameras in barns, using informants like the two people that testified against Fishman. Yeah, we should be doing a lot more than we are.
And ultimately, in a perfect world, yeah, that's what we should be doing. But who's going to monitor it and who's going to pay for it?
Right.
I mean, that's the unfortunate, reality of all this. And that actually came out with even when USADA, was the heir apparent to be our sheriff. We talked about it all the time. That's great. But how is it going to get paid for? Who's going to pay for it? What's the finance, portion of it? And as an industry, we mentioned it before, like California came out and said, we have a 99 point something percent, negative testing, meaning that horses aren't positive for banned substances. It doesn't mean that horses aren't running with banned substances out there. It just means that their testing sucks. And that's the problem, is that as an industry, we don't have a good enough testing system or investigative system or anything like that, or certainly an enforcement system. So that those are like three strikes in the trifecta of trying to get this done. I think going back to the argument or the discussion that TD, had in his article was that, baseball Hall of Fame and how does that, translate to our Hall of Fame? There's still human beings that are voting on both sides. And if people in the equine community don't like a trainer, in this case, we'll use, Baffert, then they're not going to vote for any of his horses. That's their prerogative. They've earned the vote, so technically they can do it that way. Bill, you'll appreciate this, but like you look at the Baseball Hall of Fame and the ballot, and if I said to you Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, Curt Schilling, Eddie Murray, why aren't those guys even getting 50% on their ballot or higher on their ballots, let alone get in? I think it has less to do with their stats and more to do with they were just all assholes to the people that were covering them. And now all of a sudden, this is like their one chance, the writer's one chance to kind of like get back at these guys, and for all the crap that they had to eat during the players' careers. So it still comes down to a human element in all this voting, whether it's baseball or for the Equine Hall of Fame or the Horse Hall of Fame. And we're fallible, and we're people that are going to let our own views, permeate kind of where our voting is. Guys, I know you remember this very well, but we were sitting in the studio when the original indictments came down, for Jason Service and Jorge Navarro. And as an exercise, we all kind of individually wrote down, what other trainers do you think of that if there's a boogeyman out there that's going to come in and get the next sweep of trainers? And like, I think if we each wrote down 10 names, I think there were like six or seven names that were common on every single one of them. And none of those guys, none of them have come up with any kind of the next indictment. They may have tested positive here and there for a couple of races, but it just shows how toothless and benign our current system is when, you know, we as people who follow the sport intimately, and there's others that bet on the sport on a daily basis, that can call out, you know, when these horses jump up in races, or their speed figures, you know, increase by 40 or 50% just because of a barn change. And you have to scratch your head and say, is that individual really that much better of a trainer than the previous trainer, or is there something else going on? And that's also why I'm kind of like just getting to the point where my patience has run out. Like, I just don't know what else to do. I know this is going off on a tangent, but I don't know what else to do for the industry when we can't successfully police ourselves. And when we try to police ourselves, everyone and their brother jumps in and says, well, that's unconstitutional, when they can't spell constitution.
Well, and the thing is too, like, I think the issue is the ambiguity and like how little we know, like we don't know what we don't know type thing. And that to me is the problem. And I think, you know, if Bob Baffert had not failed a test in the Kentucky Derby, I don't think he would be getting banned from NYRA, or like Churchill Downs would have banned him for 2 years. He messed up in the biggest race in the world. That was his issue. The racing overall did not care when Gamine flunked the test in a grade one race, you know, flunked two tests. Like, Charlatan flunked the test in the Arkansas Derby. Like, nobody cared to enough of an extent to actually try to ban him or suspend him. It was only when he screwed up the bag, as they say, when he fumbled the bag, which is the Kentucky Derby, the most profitable racing event in America. It was too high profile for racing to ignore it. It made too much national news for racing to not act like it was a big deal, whether or not that individual incident was that big of a deal. And that to me is the biggest issue, and why we're not, I think the answer to TD's question in the long run is we're not going to get hearings and suspensions and bans for a lot of the guys that me and Bill really suspect, because they're not going to screw up to the extent that Bob Baffert did, where they flunk a test in the biggest race in the world, either because they're more careful than Bob Baffert or because what they're using is not testable right now by the regulators. So I don't, I think racing was kind of forced into this. They were forced into actually starting to police this, first by the FBI indictments and then by Baffert making national news by his horse testing positive in the Derby. I don't think that racing overall wants to go down this path, but it's going to lead to that kind of questioning from people who are supporters of Bob Baffert. Or like, why are you going after Bob Baffert? Look at this other guy. Look at his win percentage. Look at his drug positives. Look at his move ups. And I don't think they're 100% wrong when they make those arguments. Usually, I think that there's an argument to be made, but I just don't think that racing organically wants to go after everybody. I think that in general, they would rather just let sleeping dogs lie. Whoever comes in and wins grade one races, go for it. If you don't, if you're not an outward jerk that is flagrantly flunking tests, we're just going to let it go. So I think that unfortunately is where this is.
Joe, one more point I'd like to make, though, but not to have any excuses for horse racing, you still have to have a reasonable reason to go after these people. And, you know, again, let's take back that list of the 10, we all put down the 10 guys, and let's say the seven guys on there that we all thought are, you know, juicers. Without them flunking a test, you just say, hey, I'm sure you're a bad guy. I don't need any evidence. Therefore, I'm going to, you know, try to suspend you or try to give you a hearing. I don't think you can or should do that. And it gets back to, again, sort of the USADA issue. Drug testing is completely useless. It's not useless, but is it going to catch anybody? No, it never has, and it never will. That's why we need a better system. And that's why people yelling about the constitutionality of this thing are full of, you know what.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. West Point Thoroughbreds partnerships can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost of trying to do it on your own. Learn more at westpointtb.com. Flightline.com. It was announced over the weekend that Flightline, as Bill alluded to earlier, is pointing for the Grade 2 San Carlos on March 5th at Santa Anita. He put in a 4-furlong work back on the work tab at Santa Anita on Sunday, went 47-4 in his first work after the Malibu, just in a little crossover. You can check out that work at xbtv.com. Another West Point runner, Giant Game, who placed in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. We're excited to see him come back as a 3-year-old. He's pointing to the Grade 3 Holy Bowl, which is this Saturday, February 5th. He also worked on Sunday, going 4 furlongs, 48.67. Be right back to this message from West Point Thoroughbreds.
All the thrills, fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
Being a small family business, I guess we're part of a dying breed. We're really grateful for the people that entrust us. We know it's a huge responsibility.
We're always with your horse, every step of the way. When it comes to being at the sales ground, showing your horses, we are with your horse.
Just driving up down the road every day, there's not a time that I don't look out and feel a responsibility to the sport, the animal, the people that come to invest in the game. I want to see as many people enjoy this sport as they possibly can, because we do have the most beautiful sport in the world.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Legacy Bloodstock. If you think that 50 years combined experience in the horse business could benefit your program, give Tommy or Wendy a call. They personally advise on each horse as if they were their own. Legacy has 7 horses cataloged for the upcoming Facing Tipton Kentucky Winter Mixed Sale, including Too Shy Shy, a broodmare by Distorted Humor, who's a half-sister to Grade 1 winner Lawyer Ron, plus Volata, who's a broodmare prospect by Runaway and Hyde, who was a winner at 2. Wanted to mention this before we head out. It was reported last week that Kent DeSormo was arrested for domestic abuse. He's all alleged, but apparently strangulation, like beating up a woman, like kind of the worst things you can really do as a man. I don't want to comment on this specific case. I just kind of want to say, as I often say in racing, unfortunately, when is enough enough? How many chances does Kent DeSormo get to have and burn before racing and racing stakeholders and owners finally say, no, Kent, you've had enough chances. You're too toxic. You got to go. We're not giving you any more amounts. And I know it's tough. I know he has friendships in the industry, and I know he has a substance abuse problem. And you don't want to be seen as turning your back on someone. But this is a guy who has put other people in danger for a long time, who is just abused every single chance he's gotten and has just turned his nose up at the people who are trying to help him. And eventually you can't help somebody who doesn't want to help themselves. And that describes Kent DeSormo to me to a T. This should be beyond the pale for anybody in racing to support someone who does something like this, especially who has the checkered record and past that Kent DeSormo has. Bill,
yeah, Joe, I couldn't agree more. And it's funny, I had kind of done a reversal on Kent DeSormo. Like a lot of people, I was very down on him. And he had this nice comeback last fall. Remember that weekend at Del Mar? I think he won 2 or 3 stakes races, won a couple races. And it really looked like he had gotten his act together. And it's like, you know what? Good for him. And it was kind of a case, well, everybody deserves 7 chances. Not, you know, the second chance, 7 chances. But I'm with you now. No more. It was beyond the pale. And okay, so he deserves his day in court. So it's too early for anybody in racing to take any action. You know, he still could be found innocent, and this thing could go in another direction. But if he's found guilty or convicted of this, he's enough is enough. He should be banned completely for life for horse racing. And it's a shame, and it is sad. But you know, at some point in time, you just got to stop giving a guy like this chances. And you know, he is, you used a good word, toxic. And I think there's no place in horse racing for somebody like this.
And he obviously doesn't care enough to help himself. And like I said, he puts other people in danger, other riders in danger. He's failed breathalyzer tests. He's just had chance after chance. And I just, you know, he's got a long history of trouble with the law and racing authorities. Just last week, the CHRB released a complaint against him for causing a disturbance in November. He was seen getting into an argument with his girlfriend and yelling, causing a disturbance in the RV park where security had to respond to the location. He admitted to drinking alcohol throughout the year, which is in violation of the ruling and the agreement that he signed with the CHRB to continue riding in California. He was banned from Del Mar in July 2020 after getting into an altercation. And the following September, the Del Mar steward suspended the jockey 15 days for disorderly conduct, racial slurs, and aggressive behavior. In racing, you get chance after chance if you have enough friends in high places, but it's enough. It's enough of Kent DeSormo embarrassing himself, hurting people, and putting racing in an even more disgusting light. So, all right, so that's going to do it for this week's edition of the TDN Writers Room, presented by Keeneland. A reminder that the Keeneland Spring Meet runs April 8th through April 29th. You can buy tickets starting February 15th at tickets.keeneland.com. It was great to be back with the whole Cole crew this week, finally, after a couple of weeks without the three of us. I want to thank Bill Finley, John Green, our Green Group guest of the week, Irad Ortiz Jr., our producer, Patty Wolf, our associate producer, Katie Petruniak, and our editors, Anthony LaRocca, Aaliyah LaRocca, and Nathan Wilkinson. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next week.